Becky Skillman quits the 2012 race for governor. Is the door wide open for Mike Pence? Dick Lugar votes against the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Is he responding to criticism from the right? The Buy Farewell Tour, graduation rates improve, a lunar eclipse, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 24, 2010.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Lieutenant Governor Becky Skillman announced she will not run for governor in 2012. She issued a statement that says a recent physical exam revealed minor health issues. Becky Skillman's press secretary won't reveal the nature of those issues. The statement says they won't affect her ability to continue as lieutenant governor, but she says it's best to continue without the additional stress of a gubernatorial campaign. Skillman already had a campaign operation in place and was raising money. Who will step in where Becky Skillman has stepped out? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is this a reason or an excuse for Becky Skillman to get out of the race?
I'm afraid it's an excuse. I mean, I think she served with distinction for 8 years, and she certainly served the purpose. Mitch Daniels put her on the ticket because the Democrats already had a woman lieutenant governor, and he needed to show he was at least open to the idea. So she served her purpose running with him, but when push comes to shove, he wanted one of his cronies in there, apparently, for the as his successor, and hadn't supported her all the way through this. Now, I don't doubt for a second that she has some health issues, but the election's 2 years away, okay? And the second part of that is that he had all of this time since the second election to indicate support for her, and he's never done it. So I think that's a pretty good indication that he's thrown her over the side.
I don't have any doubt that this is a personal decision on her part, but it would seem that there are some political considerations here, too.
Actually, I don't think so. I've known Becky Skillman for a long, long time, and I talked with her after I heard of her announcement. I called her, and she took my call, and we talked for about a half hour, and this is a medical reason driving this. She was gearing up. She had staff in place. She was raising money. She was doing the stuff she needed to do. She would have to be considered a favorite going into the thing because at this time she's the only person that actually indicated that she actually was right. Thinking about doing this. So, and I think Ann's absolutely wrong about the connection to Daniels on this because she's been a full partner in this thing. She's helped get his agenda through the legislature. He has counted on her to do that every step of the way. And so, you know, this was a hard day for her, very hard day for her because this is something she wanted to do. She wanted to prove all of those people who didn't think maybe she was up to the task of winning the statewide campaign for governor wrong, and she was gearing up to do just that. So this was a tough day for her.
And she'd done some things in recent years, like get a college degree to prepare mm-hmm. for that opportunity, yep. And that's more than a notion. So Mike Pence is talking about running for president or governor. Would look like this would help steer him toward governor.
I think that's an accurate assessment. I mean, with the effectively an open path now to the nomination, I mean, I don't see any other Republican that would give Mike Pence much of a challenge if, in fact, he decides to try to win the governor or at least get the nomination, Republican nomination for governor. And with Evan Bayh announcing, you know, a week prior that he isn't interested in running because of personal reasons for governor in 2012, that opens the door, it seems to me, even further for Mike Pence. So, and I'm somebody who thought probably that, you know, a few weeks ago he was leaning toward a presidential bid, But I think this does change the landscape. And it's interesting how this has been covered, not only in Indiana, but Becky Skillman's announcement deserved a staff-written item in the Des Moines Register. Now, what's the connection you would think there? Well, Des Moines being in Iowa, which is, of course, a caucus state, Mike Pence has gotten a lot of attention. He's been there twice, gave a speech that got a lot of fanfare in that state in recent months, in the fall. And so it made news even in Iowa. But I think a governor's bid is more likely now.
Well, I think it's wide open for Mike Pence. I'm not sure he won't face a challenge, though. I mean, Murray Clark's being mentioned. Right. There are other possibilities.
You know, that's one of the things that is interesting here. There are a lot of Republicans who are in position to make a serious consideration and possible run for governor. And, you know, I'm one of those who has thought that Mike Pence would run for governor before he'd run for president. So I think this does clear the field for him. But it's not an automatic. And he's also, I mean, he just won another term. So he has to make a decision pretty soon, and he has a consideration of his job in Congress to take into account. So it's not a sure thing in that regard, but he would be the front runner. But there are potential candidates on a fairly deep Republican bench.
And you want to talk about Mitch Daniels' interest in the next race. Pence hasn't gotten a Daniels endorsement either.
No, but it would be, first of all, he hasn't declared his candidacy or his interest in running like Becky Skillman had, or set up a committee to raise state funds. I mean, the likely endorsement would have been from governor to lieutenant governor. That would have been the likely endorsement if he were going to support her, which he obviously never did. But the I think Pence would have to be seen as the front runner, and obviously if you're looking for a path to the presidency, you'd be better off coming from governor than state representative. But that's not a risk-free strategy when the state is bankrupt like it is, and like with the unemployment insurance, $2 billion in the hole. Something's going to have to give here. We're cutting and cutting and cutting. Education funding is going to go down, and they may have to raise taxes. And that's not the platform he wants to run for national office from.
What are the prospects for a Republican primary?
I don't think it's a lock deal that he's going to have a clear shot if he decides to do this. I don't think he's decided yet. I really think that the presidential bid is still a possibility for Mike Pence. But even if he does run for governor, I think you mentioned Murray Clark, the Republican state chairman, soon to be former Republican state chairman. He's being encouraged by people to do this. Steve Carter's name has appeared now as a potential candidate for governor. Richard Murdoch's name has appeared again for a potential candidate for governor because he was the only million vote getter in the last election. So, you know, there's a potential for a lot of candidates.
You know, there may be other candidates, but I think if you put truth serum in the veins of Mitch Daniels and other leading Republicans, they would say that publicly they would say, hey, you know, we love primaries. Everybody always says, we love primaries. It engages the grassroots supporters, gets people energized.
I have never said that.
Say,
okay,
never heard
well,
that.
I have never
I've
said
heard I've heard that spin on this show. But you get people, I think, in their most candid moments, and they'll say, we just as soon not have a primary, and we can devote the money and the attention and do without the negative attack during the primary and focus on the general. So I'm sure there are those who would say, yeah, let's get it worked out beforehand.
Whether they can do that or not is another question.
Right, right.
But the other question they've got, too, is who sells in the Republican primary may not be the person who sells in the general election.
Good
I really
point.
Think that Murray Clark has more a broader base of appeal than
you're getting your
Mike
hopes
Pence.
Up, aren't you?
No, for a primary? Oh, I always hope for a Republican primary, no question.
Right. The U.S. Senate voted to repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy this week. It means that homosexuals can serve openly in the military. 31 senators voted against it, including Indiana Senator Richard Lugar.
I was influenced by those who are in combat presently in Afghanistan and the testimony of Marine commandants that the adjustment that would be required by this is one that really ought not to take place.
Mike McDaniel, does that Lugar vote surprise you?
No. It doesn't surprise me because I think, Dick Lugar's a guy who votes what he thinks is the right thing to do. Yeah, I love the fact that he gets criticized for doing that a lot of the time, and he did it this time, and now people are trying to claim that maybe this was a political decision to get the likes of the conservatives in the party to off his back.
Well, the conventional wisdom,
humorous.
The conventional wisdom going into this vote was that he was going to vote the other way, based in large
but
part on a statement made by Senator Joe Lieberman, who said that Lugar was a yes vote.
But he didn't say that.
Also didn't correct that Lieberman statement
Lugar
publicly.
Lugar never
right?
said that publicly.
I know.
Not one time.
I know.
Did you say it privately?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't, you know. spend a lot of time with Ian Joe in the cloakroom. You know.
Will this help him, regardless? Will this help him fend off a Tea Party challenge?
I certainly think it won't hurt him in that regard. I was disappointed in that vote because for the same reason the Tea Party people criticized Lugar, I actually thought that Lugar was gravitating more and more and more to the statesman's role by voting what was right for the country as opposed to what it was in his political interest. I think this vote was in his political interest. I think the generally held notion of the military and the population in general is the time for discrimination based on this issue is over, and it's about time Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed.
Safe vote for him, though.
It is a safe vote. It won't hurt him in the election coming forward. It may help him, as Ann has indicated. So in that regard, it's not a surprise. He made the vote, whether it was for political reasons or for his personal beliefs. The vote's the vote.
Yeah, but the bill passed, and he can look at the Tea Party folks and say, I did what you wanted.
He can, sure. But I think that those who want to see him retire within the Tea Party movement and other conservative factions of the Republican Party are not going to be satisfied or assuaged by this one vote. I mean, look at how vocal he's been on the New START treaty advocacy, which, of course, a number of Mitch McConnell and other Republicans have said, you know, don't go along with the Obama administration. It's horrible. Look at his stance on the DREAM Act,
granted, treaty that's been here since Reagan.
Well, let's talk about the DREAM Act, which he co-sponsored. And the DREAM Act, which would have, just let me finish that thought, you know, in terms of granting citizenship to certain immigrants who are in school or in the military and so forth. These are things that might have put him or would put him at odds with certain factions of the Republican Party. Is that enough to prevent his seeking re-election and winning? Probably not. But there are people out there who are going to be frustrated with him no matter what he does at this point.
There's another Indiana angle to this vote. Do you know who was in the presiding chair when the vote was cast?
Evan Bayh.
Evan Bayh.
He announced the vote.
Right.
All right.
And voted for it.
Speaking of Evan Bayh, he did a farewell tour across Indiana this week. The outgoing Democratic senator met with the media in several cities to recount his career and talk about his future. We told you last week that Bayh had ruled out running for governor in 2012.
And I felt here for at least 3 years I should put my responsibilities to my children ahead of political ambition. I just felt that was the right thing to do.
John Katzenberger, how much influence will an out-of-office Evan Bayh exert on the Indiana Democratic Party?
Well, Evan Bayh still has an awful lot of money in a campaign war chest that can speak volumes. Now, whether or not he chooses to employ that money on Indiana politics is an open question. And, you know, out of office, he'll still be a senior advisor, but I get the impression that he's disengaging from that on a more active basis. And the party really needs to find a new standard bearer because it's bereft of one right now.
Yeah, the video we just showed was from South Bend. His last stop was in Indianapolis. He said he wanted to come here last because this is where his political career started. And he actually got emotional at the news conference. There was an air of finality there.
Sure. I mean, he has spent 22 years in elective office. As we've pointed out before, never lost an election. Before, started in politics at age 30 with the Secretary of State's race. So the majority of the bulk of his life, you could say, his adult life certainly has been spent in elective office. So I'm not surprised that it would be emotional. But I think he left certainly plenty of options open. And I think, echoing what John said, he's not going to be far from the scene, and you will see Democratic candidates still reaching out to him, at least for the next cycle or two. And in fact, I think it was at the stop in maybe Clark County that he said Melina Kennedy had already, who of course is the odds-on favorite to be the Democratic nominee for mayor, Indianapolis mayor.
Asked for his help, and he said he'll give it.
And he'll give it. So, I mean, that's an indication to me that Democratic candidates are still very eager to be aligned with him and be seen with him.
He's still a player.
Out of sight, out of mind. The only thing that keeps him relevant is the $10 million, and only if he chooses to spend that in big chunks to somehow affect politics dramatically will even the money make a difference. But once he retires and decides to live in Washington and be around his kids and he's out of sight, out of mind, I don't see him being a major player.
And he's said that he hasn't given any thought to what to do with the $10 million.
Well, I think he'll play an active role in the mayoral races next year, not just for Molina, but I imagine that Fred J. Nation and Terre Haute can count on some support from,
right.
that, from that quarter, too. So I expect him to be active. I expect him to use that money to help. And, you know, Dan Parker's still the state chair and will be for the foreseeable future. And so there'll still be a role for Evan Bayh in Indiana politics.
Will be for the foreseeable future, really?
Well, I only look in terms of 30 days. So.
We asked him last week if he was going to finish out his term, and he didn't get an answer. So. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. Last week's question was, do you think Evan Bayh will ever run for office again? 56% said yes, 44% said no. Now, because of the holidays, we'll have a new question next week. And as always, if you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The graduation rates in Indiana continue to go up. The statewide graduation rate is just over 84%, up 2%. 2.5% from last year. Marion County's 11 school districts have a graduation rate of 81%. This week, a group called Common Goal, which is raising money and awareness about graduation rates, made the announcement still. There are 6 individual high schools with graduation rates under 70% in IPS, and Superintendent Eugene White knows more work needs to be done.
We have to keep on working with our students in the classroom. We have to continue to provide support programs for them if they fall behind. We have to continue to engage them in meaningful teaching and instruction.
John Schwanis, is this a blip or a trend or something else?
I think it's widespread enough, not just in Marion County, but across the state, that it's you can't just say that this is an aberration. You saw, you know, more than 60% of schools, high schools improve. So it wasn't just a Marion County issue. You've seen lots of groups, including Chamber of Commerce and others, pour money and resources into this with coaches that try to mentor students and keep them literally coming to school in the classroom and doing what they need to do to get their diplomas. So I don't think it's an aberration. You look at some of the subgroups, whether it's African American students, Latino students, students on free or reduced lunches, students with limited English proficiency, all of those groups, subgroups, went up more than 6 percentage points statewide. So I think you'd be hard-pressed to say it's an aberration. Even Mike's alma mater, Warren Central, went up, I think, almost 8 percentage points. So
what's it mean?
Well, it means that hopefully improvement is occurring. Retention is still a huge issue. And, you know, the rates jump so much that it gives me pause to wonder whether or not there are some factors with the statistics that make you think that there's an aberration. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. 81% in Marion County sounds good until you realize that, you know, it's 60% in some schools at IPS. And I think you'll see continued pressure as it goes forward. The governor's all about this. The superintendent of education is all about this. And there is an engagement that there hasn't been in the past. So let's hope it's a trend, and let's hope that the continuation of effort occurs.
And there's still a lot of room for improvement.
Absolutely. But there are no silver bullets in this. And the idea that you can just do one thing and all of a sudden the education problems are gone is ridiculous. But what's happening here, I think, in large part, is you're using mentors to make up in those areas where the family structure doesn't inculcate students with the kind of ambition to finish and graduate and go somewhere else. And those mentor programs, one-on-one, and whether it's counseling or coaches or whatever, work. And it's going to continue to work if we continue to do it. But I think it's time to stop the perennial war on the teachers, because what's showing here is it's the family structure deterioration and filling in that gap that can make the difference on educational achievement.
You know, you're right, there's not a silver bullet, but there are some best practices probably that can be gleaned.
Right.
And we should probably tip the hat to Speedway schools.
100%.
100%. Every single student basically who started there finished in 4 years, and that's pretty impressive.
So who deserves the credit?
Well, I think a lot of people do. I think what we're starting to see, and I agree, we've got a long way to go, and trying to put your arms around how they calculate these figures is tougher than Chinese arithmetic. I mean, it's really difficult to figure out what really is a graduate and what isn't. But it's good news, and that's positive news. But, you know, as far as credit goes, I think what we're seeing is results of the fact that people are starting to really put pressure on these schools to perform. And they are feeling it, both from the federal government and the state government. And that's starting to show up. People are actually performing because they're expected to.
All right, the governor recently looked back on 2010 in a one-on-one interview. His highlights, the Republican takeover of the Indiana House and passage of the property tax referendum. The new 60-40 Republican majority in the Indiana House was accomplished by several means, but one of the big factors was the money raised and spent by Aiming Higher, the political action committee started by Mitch Daniels.
For Indiana to be a leader in jobs,
it paid for TV commercials and more as Daniels sought to end the reign of Democratic House Speaker Pat Bauer.
To what degree do you take credit for the win in the Indiana House?
No, slightly. I think my main contribution was to recruit some really good people. I did spend some time on that.
If Daniels demurs with regard to the House gains, he's not shy about his other win, the referendum to place property tax caps in the state constitution.
So we have the lowest property taxes in America now, we discover. I like that. But it also is going to be a very positive thing for the business climate. It's already being cited by analysts and scholars because of the certainty it brings, the certainty of low taxes in that area.
Now Daniels hopes to accomplish reform in education, local governments, and criminal justice, and the November results are a key.
The majority was really important because it opened the door to these changes. They're not dead on arrival anymore.
And Delaney, will Democrats work with Governor Daniels in 2011?
Oh, I think so. I mean, there are Democrats who are interested in government reform and interested in prison population reform as long as it doesn't deal with violent offenders. So I think there are opportunities there for him. And frankly, I think on the government reform issue, he's going to have as much of a problem with the Republican majority in the House and the Senate as he did with Democrats. So it's going to be interesting to see whether he can get the Republican majority to really do something meaningful, not a Band-Aid, but something meaningful in terms of local government reform.
Yeah, he says his proposals won't be dead on arrival now, but they won't necessarily be embraced.
No, because he's been very bold about what he's offered for ideas for public policy, and that's always going to be tougher. But let me tell you know, as they used to say, if they hadn't won, they would have had to work twice as hard to get half as much done, and that's true, because a lot of these ideas were dead on arrival. And now you're going to see Democrats, I think, going to support a lot of these ideas because they do want reform in education and other things. There's some pent-up desire in the Democrat caucus as well in the House, more so in the House than the Senate. And I think you're going to see a lot get done this session because of that.
2011, is that the year that makes or breaks Mitch Daniels' legacy?
I think his supporters would say his legacy is already set and established. He can point to money derived from the toll road lease. Now, some people would say that's a negative, but you look at the money that's been spent and available for infrastructure improvements around the state, and I'm sure many of his supporters would say that's a net gain. You look at some of the other things he has done, and if he can bring about education, significant education reform, and certainly the first criminal justice code reform since, 1976, those would be significant accomplishments.
78. Prospects for Mitch Daniels in 2011.
Well, I think they're very good, and as has been mentioned, he has been very bold in what he's gone forward with. That's why he's been controversial, but it's also why things have changed. Whatever his legacy will be, how history will judge his legacy, he will have a long legacy to consider for judgment because he has been very active.
When he does the criminal justice reform, though, I really think he needs to involve the prosecutors in this, and I don't think he's done that so far. They are formidable.
The Prosecutors Association was involved.
Sure,
in the
they may have been, but not all the prosecutors feel that they have buy-in to this. And well, I'm sorry,
well,
Mike, but they carry a lot of weight.
You can't get 92 prosecutors agree on anything.
Well,
I know. I used to represent them.
They agreed on you.
No, they did. That was the smartest thing they ever did.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Finally, stargazers in Indiana had the opportunity to witness a lunar eclipse this week. The Earth passed directly between the sun and the moon, gradually casting a giant shadow. All of the sun's rays were blocked, which usually turns the moon a reddish color. The lunar eclipse took place on the same day as the winter solstice for the first time since 1638. Mike McDaniel, will Indiana Democrats return to power in the state Senate before that happens again?
No.
Oh, you know, we've been through this with so many cycles. This is just another cycle. They'll bounce back, and they'll bounce back way before
in
that.
Your lifetime?
In my lifetime.
380 years in the wilderness, huh?
It won't be that long.
Wow.
It won't be that long.
It's an overstatement.
Yeah.
His prediction.
Something Jim never does.
His prediction apparently makes Anne glow red, I think, at least today. So.
Yeah. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.